Chapter 25. They went downstairs to the dining room for breakfast, and after breakfast he told her he had some insurance business to attend to. "Guess while I'm doing it, you'd better step out and buy yourself whatever you need." He smiled, and added with an embarrassed laugh, "Oh no, I always wanted you to beat all the other girls." He drew something from his pocket and pushed it across the table to her, and she saw that he had given her two $20 bills. "If it ain't enough, there's more. Where that come from? I want you to beat them all hollow," he repeated. She flushed and tried to stammer out her thanks, but he had pushed back his chair and was leading the way out of the dining room. In the hall he paused a minute to say that, if it suited her, they would take the 3 o'clock train back to North Dormer. Then he took his hat and coat from the rack and went out. A few minutes later Charity went out too. As he had watched to see in what direction he was going, and she took the opposite way, and walked quickly down the main street to the brick building on the corner of Lake Avenue. There she paused to look cautiously up and down the thoroughfare, and then climbed the brass-bound stairs to Dr. Merkel's door. The same bushy-headed mulatto girl admitted her, and after the same interval of waiting in the red plush parlor she was once more summoned to Dr. Merkel's office. The doctor received her without surprise, and led her into the inner plush sanctuary. "I thought you'd be back, but you've come a mite too soon. I told you to be patient and not fret," she observed, after a pause of penetrating scrutiny. Charity drew the money from her breast. "I've come to get my blue brooch," she said, flushing. "Your brooch?" Dr. Merkel appeared not to remember. "My, yes, I get so many things of that kind. Well, my dear, you'll have to wait while I get it out of the safe. I don't leave valuables like that laying round like the newspaper." She disappeared for a moment and returned with a bit of twisted up tissue paper from which she unwrapped the brooch. Charity, as she looked at it, felt a stir of warmth at her heart. She held out an eager hand. "Have you got the change?" she asked a little breathlessly, laying one of the $20 bills on the table. "Change? What did I want to have change for? I only see two twenties there," Dr. Merkel answered brightly. Charity paused, disconcerted. "Thought you said it was $5 a visit. For you, as a favor I did. But how about the responsibility and the insurance? I don't suppose you ever thought of that? This pin's worth $100 easy. If it had got lost or stole, where'd I been when you come to claim it?" Charity remained silent, puzzled and half convinced by the argument, and Dr. Merkel promptly followed up her advantage. "Didn't ask you for your brooch, my dear. I'd a good deal ruther folks paid me my regular charge than have 'em put me to all this trouble." She paused, and Charity, seized with a desperate longing to escape, rose to her feet and held out one of the bills. "Will you take that?" she asked. "No, I won't take that, my dear, but I'll take it with its mate, and hand you over a signed receipt, if you don't trust me." "Oh, but I can't, it's all I've got," Charity exclaimed. Dr. Merkel looked up at her pleasantly from the plush sofa. "He seems you got married yesterday, up to the Episcopal Church. I heard all about the wedding from the minister's chore man. It would be a pity, wouldn't it, to let Mr. Royal know you had an account running here? I just put it to you as your own mother might." Anger flamed up in Charity, and for an instant she thought of abandoning the brooch and letting Dr. Merkel do her worst. But how could she leave her only treasure with that evil woman? She wanted it for her baby. She meant it, in some mysterious way, to be a link between Arnie's child and its unknown father. Trembling and hating herself, while she did it, she laid Mr. Royal's money on the table, and catching up the brooch fled out of the room and the house. In the street she stood still, dazed by this last adventure. But the brooch lay in her bosom like a talisman, and she felt a secret lightness of heart. It gave her strength, after a moment, to walk on slowly in the direction of the post office, and go in through the swinging doors. At one of the windows she bought a sheet of letter paper, an envelope and a stamp. Then she sat down at a table and dipped the rusty post office pen in ink. S.E. had come there possessed with a fear which had haunted her ever since S.E. had felt Mr. Royal's ring on her finger. The fear that Harney might, after all, free himself and come back to her. It was a possibility which had never occurred to her during the dreadful hours after S.E. had received his letter. Only when the decisive step S.E. had taken made longing turn to apprehension, did such a contingency seem conceivable. She addressed the envelope, and on the sheet of paper she wrote, "I'm married to Mr. Royal. I'll always remember you. Charity." The last words were not in the least what S.E. had meant to write. They had flowed from her pen irresistibly. S.E. had not had the strength to complete her sacrifice. But, after all, what did it matter? Now that there was no chance of ever seeing Harney again, why should she not tell him the truth? When S.E. had put the letter in the box, she went out into the busy sunlit street and began to walk to the hotel. Behind the plateglass windows of the department store, she noticed the tempting display of dresses and dress materials that had fired her imagination on the day when she and Harney had looked in at them together. They reminded her of Mr. Royal's injunction to go out and buy all she needed. She looked down at her shabby dress and wondered what she should say when he saw her coming back empty-handed. As she drew near the hotel, she saw him waiting on the doorstep, and her heart began to beat with apprehension. He nodded and waved his hand at her approach, and they walked through the hall and went upstairs to collect their possessions, so that Mr. Royal might give up the key of the room when they went down again for their midday dinner. In the bedroom, while she was thrusting back into the satchel the few things S.E. had brought away with her, she suddenly felt that his eyes were on her, and that he was going to speak. She stood still, her half-folded nightgown in her hand, while the blood rushed up to her drawn cheeks. "Well, did you rig yourself out handsomely? I haven't seen any bundles round," he said jocosely. "Oh, I'd rather let Elihaz make the few things I want," she answered. "That so?" He looked at her thoughtfully for a moment, and his eyebrows projected in a scowl. Then his face grew friendly again. "Well, I wanted you to go back looking stylisher than any of them, but I guess you're right. You're a good girl, Charity." Their eyes met, and something rose in his that she had never seen there. A look that made her feel ashamed and yet secure. "I guess you're good too," she said, shyly and quickly. He smiled without answering, and they went out of the room together and dropped down to the hall in the glittering lift. Late that evening, in the cold autumn moonlight, they drove up to the door of the Red House. The end of Project Gutenberg, a text of Summer by Edith Wharton. Summer by Gutenberg Edition.